I'm Daniel, and you're watching The Movie Buff Show. For this conversation, I was able to do some coverage for the animated short film Nemu, which premiered at Tribeca, and spoke with the film's writer and director Eric Oh, as well as Kane Lee, who is the head of content at Baobab Studios. The film is described as a narrative poem that is an ode to a grandfather's passing, as the story follows the journey of a budding artist and his tree of life from beginning to end. The film is available to watch on Tribeca at home through June 23rd by purchasing a Shorts Pass. More info is below, and thank you for supporting The Movie Buff. Let's get right into this conversation with the team behind Nemu. I'd love it if you guys could start by introducing yourselves.
Eric.
Oh yeah, okay. Hi, my name is Eric Goh, the director and writer of the short film Nemu. We proudly presented at Tribeca for the first time. Currently based in Bay Area. New York is one of my favorite cities, so I'm just happy to be here.
Okay.
Cool. I'm Kane Lee. I'm one of the producers of Nemu. I'm also the head of content of Baobab Studios, which is the indie animation house that collaborated with Eric Oh and our amazing team on this project. We're a six-time Emmy Award winning studio. We're really proud of this, that we created this entire experience in film during the pandemic, which has been an emotional roller coaster ride for everyone involved, not just because of the content, but how we created the film. And we're just really proud to be working with Eric. You know, he just got an Oscar nomination for his last animated short masterpiece, Opera, which I'm a huge fan of. So we're just really excited to be at Tribeca Film Festival now, showing audiences in person for the first time this really special project to us, Nemu.
Okay, neat. I love the intros. Awesome. I'd love to start by asking Eric, can you tell me a bit about what it was like, where you first got inspired to tell the story and to make it as like an ode to your grandfather?
Right. So the core story of this short film has been, you know, in my mental drawer for a long, long time. You know, my grandfather passed away about 10 years ago. And then, you know, immediately I came up with this idea of Tree of Life. But I didn't actually take it to the next level at the time because I was so emotionally overwhelmed and just, you know, have it sit there. And then as I grew up and then as I learned more about diversity and over all those different stages of life, you know, at a certain point I kind of knew that, oh, now probably it's about time for me to finally revisit this idea and share it with the world. So that's how the Nemu has come to life.
Can you tell me a bit like about why you wanted to use the Nemu as a storytelling device in a way?
So you mean a tree, right?
Yeah,
so,
the tree, yeah.
Yeah, so some of you, tree, Nemu means tree in Korean.
Okay.
And then, it is about passage of time. We are following this footstep of the main character from his birth all the way to his last chapter of his life. And then we are talking about passage of time. And then I thought the tree is the symbol that could really visually, you know, express and showcase the passage of time, because tree is one of the natural, you know, object that really transforms over the course of the time. From spring, you know, it's filled with blooming flowers, and in summer it turns into fresh like youth green, and all the leaves turn into like youthful green, and in fall, you know, it turns into enchanting yellow, red, and it loses all the leaves, and in winter, it just goes into pure white. And when its strings comes back, it all goes all the way from the beginning. And then this whole concept of tree, I mean, Nemu is all about that. You know, the beginning and the ending is deeply connected, and we are here in cycle and circle of life, right? So that is why we are telling the story, you know, with this tree in the middle.
Okay. Now, speaking about the seasons, were there any that are particularly challenging to animate?
It is challenging, and it was fun at the same time. For example, there is a moment where the thunderstorm coming in, and there's a, you know, thunderbolts, you know, lightning and coming down, and entire object and like props were kind of like quivering and you know. because of the storm. And that was, of course, extremely hard because we had to hand animate every single object you saw in the screen. But at the same time, it was very satisfying because we felt like, oh my God, this is really coming to life. We feel it. We feel the anger and rage and sadness you know, of the character at this moment.
Yeah, unlike in regular CG animation, we didn't have like, we couldn't use lights where, you know, it calculates, you know, across an entire scene. So not only did we hand paint every object and hand animate every object, but had to paint different lighting on them depending on which season you're in and what's happening during the event. So every frame is lovingly handcrafted to reflect not only the object and the way it's supposed to be animated, but like that particular time in his life and that season.
Okay, and that the objects all kind of like blend together on the tree. So I'm curious if you guys like had a favorite object on the tree that like means something to you, or is just your favorite in general.
Maybe Kane, you can pick one. I can pick one. You wanna start first, Kane?
You know, I don't know. I'm attached to the pacifier just because it's like the first thing he puts on there, and I'm just thinking like, you know, that's how he begins his tree of life. It was funny. We were talking amongst our crew about our own personal tree of lives, you know, and this one was very much a reflection of Eric. And I was joking that my pacifier would be a car because I was born in a car. And we were just joking about how my tree of life starting with a car popping out would be kind of hilarious. So that's my roundabout answer to your question. But I hope that everyone who watches the experience can like ascribe to that one, you know, that one important object, you know, that it actually really, really means something. And, you know, in this case, without giving away too much, you know, there is an object that he comes back to in the experience. And I think we all have that as well, too.
Yeah. For me, like, it's a bit of a fun fact slash Easter egg that, you know, in the beginning, when he was a boy, you know, there's a dinosaur plush shows up. And that is actually, it's from my childhood. I used to actually have that everywhere. I used to carry around like when I was a 5 year old, and it's still in my parents' place. So I asked my mom to take a photo of it, and our designer were able to design, you know, the plush into the piece. So I got to pick that one as my favorite one.
That's great. I know you're an animator at Pixar. So like, is that going to be like a trademark through all your films?
Oh yeah.
Like the A113, how they use that. Like maybe the plushie will show up in your next one.
We'll see. I'll consider that. You know, maybe in my next film there is a dinosaur plush in the back or somewhere.
Okay, cool. Now, from your time at Pixar, is there anything that you've like, are there any lessons that you've learned from there that you've like thought about often or have applied to most of your films that you've made?
Oh my God, I learned so many things at Pixar. I mean, it was a priceless, precious, you know, such an important part of my life, basically, you know. But if I have to pick the one thing, you know, it's communication, because Pixar, we have hundreds of people working together for a long, long time. And we are heading towards that one guiding star. And then in order to achieve it, we have to communicate like every day and night, like in the morning. And then, you know, so that type of communication skill, or the way to put not losing your voice, but still being able to listen to others, you know, in a very sincere level. And then that has been, you know, some of the really important stuff I learned, and then that I'm using every day, literally, you know, as I am directing or working with a lot of like collaborators and artists, you know. Yeah.
Perfect. Now, I think I have time for like two more. So I really wanted to ask about the music, just because I don't know if that really gets like talked about too much in animation, but like, you know, the visuals are so beautiful, but the music is so great. So I'm just curious if you guys could talk about the collaboration for figuring out what song would go over, like what score would go over it.
Kay, you wanna take that question?
Yeah, I mean, we worked with Zach and Mateo, longtime collaborators of Eric, and obviously his very first choice to create this score. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we were attempting to create this very lyrical narrative animated poem, like literally come to life. So I think it was really important for the music and the score and the animation and the unfolding of the story to really sort of complement each other and never to like overwhelm each other. And so there's kind of a spareness in the way we tell the story. You know, I think Eric, one of Eric's earlier works, the animation historian Charles Solomons called it like animation as haiku in a way. But so figuring out like that balance, a lot of this piece was about balancing like the ups and the downs, the emotions of joy and sorrow. We're filling in 12 minutes, a lot of content, right? Like a lot of details in this man's life. But I think where Eric and our amazing composers and the orchestra like just really shined was like giving the piece a real sense of shape and purpose, and like, and that it wasn't this just episodic type of unfolding of a life, but it was actually like a life that has like an arc and a shape, and that, you know, comes to this sort of surprising ending, and then takes a lot of sorrow, and then ultimately ends in this sense of like fulfillment and acceptance. So I think tracking, the emotional tracking, is where the music really shined to truly help underscore this sort of seamless shape to the piece.
I mean, in addition to what Kane just shared with us, I mean, this piece doesn't have any dialogue, right? So music is telling us a story. Like, it is guiding us, you know, okay, this character is in this mindset, he's in this kind of situation. So music is really the critical, you know, a piece, part of this, the Namu. So, yeah.
Okay, perfect. And thank you guys for sharing Namu with the world.
Namu.
Okay. And thank you for Eric O and Kane Lee for chatting with me about Namu on The Movie Buff.
Thank you so much.
Anyone, thanks for having us.